Welcome to the Self-Esteem and Confidence Mindset with me, Johnny Pardo. Welcome to the Self-Esteem and Confidence Mindset podcast with me, Johnny Pardo, here to coach you from self-doubt to self-confidence to get to where you want to go. Today, I've got a very special guest with joining me today. Welcome, Peter.
Hey, Johnny, what an absolute pleasure to be here, my friend. Very excited to spend some time. We finally made it happen.
Yeah, I'm very excited too that we managed to. And I'm just so excited by the amount of value you're going to give today on this podcast episode. So thanks so much for making time for me as well. I appreciate you.
Very welcome. And that's our intent. So yes, I'd invite the audience to set an intent to really listen in, to tune into what can be of value to them as well. And let's see where we meet in the middle.
Awesome. So I'll just give a quick introduction to Peter before Peter can go into a little bit more about himself, and then we'll go into the podcast. So Peter Sage is a world-renowned international entrepreneur, author, and teacher. Peter's mission is to help others reinvent their lives by sharing fast, actionable tools and strategies from 30 years of navigating the valleys of hell and the pinnacles of success. So, Peter, can you tell us a little bit more, if people are new to your work, about what you do and actually what got you to this point?
Always a great question to start with. And one thing I like to remind people of is, no matter what the accolades somebody has or, you know, where you perceive them to be in their journey, we're all made of the same stuff. Yeah, the second you put somebody on a pedestal, by contrast, you minimize your own greatness. And my role here over the next half hour, 45 minutes or so, is really just to hold up a mirror to remind people of their own greatness by pointing out some of the blind spots we tend to forget. And yeah, my journey started, yeah, pretty unremarkable. I was born on a low-cost housing estate, council estate in Leicester. Yeah, my parents weren't wealthy or anything like that. I didn't do very well at school. Yeah, I'm not academic. I dropped out of school at 16. Yeah, but I always had that thing in the back of my mind that, yeah, I'm responsible for my own life story. I didn't buy into the traditional mainstream agendas of, you know, go get a job, go to college, get a job, get 2.2 kids and a mortgage, go retire. And all that. No, I felt we were born for more than that. And I had this insatiable thirst for answers as to what the game is about. Now, that led me to personal growth. Now, my main background is entrepreneur. I started my first business at 17. I've had 26, 27 international companies since then. Some have failed majestically. Some have wiped me out completely. Yeah, some bounced my head off the pavements, yeah, emotionally, financially, and everything else, wiped me out. Some multi-million dollar success stories and pretty much everything in between. And what I learned through that was that the parallel journey that I took, one was business and the other was personal growth. And personal growth defined by an intent to want to become a better version of myself. Now, initially, that was driven by insecurities. I think we all have, you know, the fear that we're not enough. And we're going to talk about that as we move forward. But it was really a case of, as I was learning personal growth, and I came across, you know, some of the great names that we're all familiar with, like Tony Robbins, who I had the privilege of working with as a trainer for, you know, a decade and a half. Somebody who I know you know very well, Joseph McClendon, yeah, an amazing gentleman with a wealth of knowledge and experience. And it really started me down a specific path of personal development that very few people look at. And that was not the motivation side. Yeah, that is full of people teaching how to be motivated. It wasn't really so much the confidence side. It was something different. It was about understanding human behavior. What makes us get up in the morning excited or not excited? What makes us get on with each other? What makes us, in face of all of the odds, still step up and reach for, beyond our comfort zone? Versus those people who have all of the resources, they have the right parents and the background and the credit score and the ideas and the education, all of that stuff. And they never take the bat off their shoulder and take a swing and live what would be essentially a disappointing life in relation to their potential. What is the difference? It's not IQ. Mm. Yeah, plus or minus, we're all pretty much similar IQ. It's not levels of desire and motivation. Now, it's not levels of, they're all byproducts or consequences of something deeper. So as I was charting my own journey, rather than focus on how to be a motivational speaker or anything like that, It's like, no, let's go deeper. Let's peel the onion back. Let's look deeper in the mirror where most people don't want to look. And what I discovered, and the way that I'm hopefully able to try to frame it in simple terms, because I'm not a qualified psychologist, thank you, or a psychotherapist, if you spell it out. Yeah, it helps people make better sense of their life, whether that's their limiting beliefs or patterns, or whether that's to help charter a way out of the maze that people end up on this hamster wheel of mediocrity that they never really know how to step off of. So that's really my background. And I've been very blessed over the last 30 years now with having that quest to have formed a philosophy that I think, if I can share some of the key points with people today, is going to really help them take a step forward practically, rather than it become more data for later, which is where most personal growth ends up.
Yeah. That's a fantastic introduction, Peter, and I'm looking forward to hearing about some of those principles. One thing I've sort of noticed you were talking about then, and when I speak to other people in the personal growth world, particularly doing really, really well with it, is this kind of questioning of life or questioning their own life, and actually, not being afraid to challenge the norm and the way things are. So could you tell us a little bit more about the importance of asking quality questions in life?
Questions are the steering wheel of the mind. Questions direct focus. And if you really want to get straight into it, the only thing that we can do in life, the only thing, I'm sorry, I'm open to being challenged because I'm not addicted to being right. But the only thing we can actually do in life is experience. That's it. Life is an experience activity. If you want to take it one step further, the only thing we can actually experience is the act of experiencing. Yeah, but when it comes to questions take the reins of the self-talk and the direction of focus, and they apply it to something. So if you go to the Amazon rainforest at night and you have a flashlight, you can point that flashlight in many different directions. You say, oh my goodness, look at this snake eating a rat. Or you can say, wow, look at this hummingbird being born. Everything is available. You have the ability to ask whatever questions, but where do you want to point your flashlight? Because most people point it in a direction that doesn't serve them. They ask questions like, what's wrong with me? Yeah, why can't I have something? Well, guess what? Your brain is designed to find the answer. It is a faithful Labrador that will go chasing after the stick and it'll bring it back. Now, some people, that's not a stick, it's a hand grenade, right? So if you say, what's wrong with me? Your brain will come up with the answer. It's part of its job. Oh, yeah, you're clearly not as smart as you should be. Oh, it's because your teacher was right when they said you'd never amount to anything. Oh, it's because you're not good looking enough, tall enough, short enough, whatever it is, fill in the blank. So asking better questions, if you know the brain is designed to bring an answer, why not ask questions that the answers could empower you rather than disempower you? So instead of saying, why does this always happen to me? Being able to shift your focus and say, okay, what's great about this I've not noticed yet? Okay, if this has happened, clearly it's for a reason. Do I live in a friendly or a hostile universe? The most powerful question Albert Einstein said a person could ask in their lifetime, because that leads you down two very different corridors of experience in this life. If you think you live in a hostile universe, you're going to be looking through a fear-based lens and justify the position of victim. If you think you live in a friendly universe, you're going to be asking questions when things that don't fit your picture show up and get curious as about what bend in the river is happening, because we can't see around the bends. In fact, I would assert that most of the, let's call it the dark squares on the chessboard that, are the negative things that happen in life, turned out to be stepping stones to something much greater 6 months down the line when we look behind. Now, whether that was a end of a relationship, whether that was a job we weren't happy with that we got fired in, or whether that was just the ability for give us a kick up the backside to be able to go do something different with our life because what we were focusing on wasn't helping, doesn't matter. I think all of us can have the experience of turning around and saying, oh, wow, thank goodness that happened 6 months ago. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this now. But at the time, it was traumatic. It was scary. It was depressive. It was whatever. But we didn't ask the questions. So my question to the people listening is this. If we've had experiences like that quite often, and we know that 6 months later, we're likely going to turn around and say, wow, thank goodness that happened. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this now. Why wait 6 months to feel that?
Yeah, and I know obviously in the Tony world, one of his traditional quotes is, the quality of your questions determines the quality of your life. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what you were just saying about, in 6 months you can be reflecting back in hindsight and say, oh, what did I take away from that? But actually, you're always going to have challenges coming into life, whatever stage, whatever level you are. But actually being able to direct those thoughts is absolutely key. And I remember my own personal experience when I, you know, a few years ago when I was just in a corporate job and just miserable and not really having much purpose, the questions I'd ask myself, and it was unconscious to me, was, what's going to go wrong today? Or what do I have to worry about today? Now it's like, what's awesome about me? And what's going to be even more awesome about today? So yeah, absolutely love what you're saying, that we have the ability to direct that focus now. So thank you so much for sharing that, Peter. I appreciate that.
Well, it's not so much about the ability, because we all have the ability to ask different questions.
Yeah.
It's, why do some people with that knowledge still choose to ask lousy questions? And if we start looking at that, that's going to be far more empowering for people to uncover the patterns of limitation, because it doesn't take a PhD to ask a better question. Mm. It takes a different level of understanding the context of your life to be able to ask a better question. And so what I'd like to throw out there is that the concept of understanding, there is a huge difference between biological maturity and emotional maturity. And as we probably know, there's a lot of, you know, emotional teenagers running around some pretty adult bodies. And so three of the primary keys that I think that are almost demarcation events, graduation events on the path or the journey to emotional maturity that would allow you to self-reflect at that level, you know, almost unconsciously rather than beat yourself up. Mm-hmm. I'll share three things, because I think that's going to be a powerful level of understanding. Mm. The first is, I'd say one of the greatest days in a human being's life when it comes to emotional maturity is the day they finally become okay not being liked. Now, that's tough for a lot of people, because most of us have grown up with a pattern of conditional love. In other words, you know, from a parenting model, as babies from 0 to 18 months, we can't do anything wrong. Yeah, we cry at 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, it's inconvenient for the parent who hasn't slept for 2 nights, but they don't stop loving us, because that's what babies do.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's inconvenient. Yeah, I've got my new suit on, about to go for a job interview, and you know, hold the baby for a second, they puke all over me, right? Mm. It's frustrating, but we don't stop loving the baby, because that's what babies do. Mm. Now, at some point further down the track, and about 2 years old, you're 18 months, 2 years old, there is a point where there is a two-way level of communication that's starting to build, to the point where the parent believes that if they tell the child no, and the child then understands them and does something that they said they shouldn't do anyway, there is some sort of level of consequence to that. Now, I'm not saying it's the right or wrong model of parenting. I'm just explaining how most people form these patterns. In other words, by the time we have our earliest memory, which is 4, 5, 6 years old for many people, we've already had several years of learning that love is conditional. When I say love is conditional, I'm talking about from the perspective and the perception of the baby or the child, because I'm not saying the parent stops loving the child, but perception is reality. And if you have grown up knowing that if I do this, then the perception of is that love is taken away, approval's taken away, you know, judgment is given, condemnation, anger, you know, disconnection, you know, lack of approval, you know, validation, all the usual suspects. I have a model of the world that says I need to act in a particular way in order to get somebody else to approve of me. I become massively externally validated. And the day we wake up and finally become okay not being liked, because you know, we've spent most of our life up to that point running around looking for somewhere else to reattach our umbilical cord, is a day of freedom. And so many people are trapped in what I call GOOP, G-O-O-P, the good opinion of other people. And if you're swimming in that sticky, nasty, smelly substance called goop, you're never going to be able to have the one thing that allows you to be you, which is authenticity, because you're always adapting unconsciously through the lens of, oh, well, if they don't like me this way, I'll be that way. Or what will they think if I do that? And that's not you showing up. That's you shutting down. Mm. That's you playing the game of hide and seek with reality because you're too afraid of what other people think of you. So let me give you a technique on how to get rid of that almost immediately if you're open and aware enough to be able to take it on. Because some people get secondary gain from that. Some people get more out of being a victim. Have you ever tried to out-victim a victim? Yeah, not going to happen. And some people are just not ready to let go yet, which is fine. If they're going to get their own lessons, you send them some love. There's no judgment. It's not down to IQ. But yes, some people have to hit their head on the sidewalk in order to learn how to tie their shoelaces, and we have no right to take their lesson away. What we have the right to do is to be an example, an invitation, and then don't judge them if they choose not to accept the invitation. Mm. Yeah. So if you have the metaphor, Johnny, that we are all stars of our own movie. And I know that because we're the only people in every single scene of our own movie. Nobody else is in every single scene.
Yeah, 100%.
There are no co-stars in your movie. Yeah, even Siamese twins dream differently, right? So you may have some supporting cast, yeah, a spouse, a soulmate, a sibling, a boss, a best friend, whatever it may be. But the vast, vast majority of people in your movie, by definition, are nothing more than film extras. Now, how do you define a film extra? Pretty simple. Mm-hmm. Somebody you're not thinking about when they're not in your current scene. Okay. Now, here's where we start to piece it together. Because the challenge with us seeing ourselves as the star of our movie is that we walk around misperceiving that everybody else sees us the same way as the star of our movie. But they don't, because they're starring in a different movie called their own. Which means by definition, we play one of two roles in most people's movies, or everybody else's movies. One is supporting cast, maybe a handful of people. But the vast majority of people that we encounter on a day-to-day basis, the people that serve us in Starbucks, the people that walk through the office, the people, we are nothing more than film extras in their movie, which means by definition that most people don't care enough about us to bother to even give an opinion because they're too busy being worried what they think. We're thinking of them. Case closed. And when you wake up to understand that awareness, you realize that we've been playing so small by trying to pretend to be, you know, to fit into somebody else's movie, hoping they'll notice us. Mm. Right? No, it doesn't work that way. So when you finally wake up and become okay not being liked, because you realize that everybody else is just projecting from the level that they're at, they can't do anything else. Somebody comes up and calls you an asshole. I've got news for you. It's not about you. Now, if you happen to be engaging in some behavior that is causing them distress, then yeah, take a look at that and shift your behavior. But for the vast majority of people, criticism that comes at them is nothing more than a projection of the criticizer, not an accurate reflection of whatever it is that you're doing or how you hold yourself. You're just not fitting their pictures. But your job is not to fit their pictures. Your job is to fit your own pictures. And you can't do that if you're swimming in goop, the good opinion of other people. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think a lot of people do take it personally, like it is to do with them. And that's certainly a challenge I used to face, and many people I've worked with do face, is that they think someone else's criticism, whether it's on social media or in person or something like that, is to do with them. It's personally to do with them. But like you say, it's often that person's own insecurities or their perception going on to that other person.
Always.
And then they rather than thinking about them.
Yeah, I call it anti-social media these days, because that's pretty much what it is on there. But again, if you want a key point to remind yourself here, I'd invite your viewers to tattoo this on the inside of their eyelids. Yeah. The moment we make it about somebody else, we lose our power. Mm. The moment we make it about somebody or something or some experience or something, whatever it may be, the moment we make it about anything other than us, we lose our power. Somebody comes up and calls us an asshole. We make it about, oh, that nasty person, and we start reacting. No, no, no. What am I here to learn? Yeah. What's my invitation here? My invitation is to be able to hold a space for this person, to look at it from a different place of curiosity as to why somebody who hardly even knows me, would come up and project that. It's not about, it's not about you as such, but it's not about, I say, if you make it about blaming them rather than seeing what you can learn, or shifting, owning the power of the perspective by seeing it for what it is, then you're giving your power away if you start being reactive to other people. Because one of the greatest sources of stress is expecting you from other people. When you want to you know, live your life through the lens of thinking that somebody else should act, be, do, or behave in the way that you want them to, you're setting yourself up for banging your head on a wall.
You have no control over that.
Of course not. Yeah. Yeah. But most people project, which is why when they do project, if we take it personally, yeah, we lose our power. It's not about that. Second biggest day in the journey of emotional maturity. First one is the day we wake up and realize that, you know, I'm okay not being liked, because trying to be liked by everybody is a fool's game.
Yeah.
I don't want to be liked. I want to be authentic. And then the people that are meant to like me, yeah, it's just the old saying, those that mind won't matter, those that matter won't mind. Yeah. So, but the second big day is the day we wake up to the reality that life is not a comfort-centric experience, but life is a growth-centric experience. And when we own that at a deeper than intellectual level of cursory understanding, our lives change. And the reason we get seduced into this comfort zone illusional mentality, delusional mentality, is because as human beings, we have two sides to us. We know this. And again, I'm slicing, dicing different ways, but you know, as a general level of duality, we have a physical side and we have a non-physical side. The human being is the perfect encapsulation of both. We have physical body, but it's not who we are. We know that because, you know, if I was to cut your arm off, you'd be 15% less body, but not 15% less Johnny. You'd still be 100% you.
Yeah.
You just have 15% less body, but you wouldn't have 15% less personality, you know, sense of humor or memories or all of that kind of stuff.
Right. IQ, so but I'd still be me.
100%.
Yeah.
So the reason that people get caught into this comfort centric delusion is if they identify too much with the body. So you're not your body. What makes you you? What makes Johnny so unique is the non-physical, it's the invisible stuff. It's your personality, your hopes, your goals, your dreams, your sense of humor, your way you look at the world, your values, all of that stuff makes you you. If I was to take that out of your body and put it in a different body, you'd be you with a different body. So the non-physical is really where we experience life. We get data input from the senses that we perceive as physical, but I don't say am arm. I say my arm is something I have. Not something, I am. I don't say I'm going for am haircut. I know I'm going for my haircut, right? It's like it's something, it's like a possession. I'm gonna wash my car, not am car, right? Same with the body. So when we realize that if we identify with the body has a nervous system that is hardwired by design for comfort. Now that's useful when it comes to sitting too close to a fire.
Yeah.
Or walking on glass or sitting on an ant's nest, perfect. But if we identify with the body, we seduce ourselves into thinking life is a comfort-centric experience, and it isn't. Life is a growth-centric experience because that's what the non-physical part of us is wired for. Our soul or whatever label you want to get into, I'm not attached, is not wired for comfort. It's wired for growth. Now, if you don't understand that, you're going to start labeling everything that doesn't fit your comfort pictures as a problem. And you're going to complain. But instead, when you start to realize that you take an athlete as a physical example, an athlete training for the Olympics who's in the gym, they know that if they push their body past its comfort zone, it is pre-programmed to return with a better version of itself. Why do we think the real essence of us is different? See, the strongest trees don't grow in the best soil. They grow in the strongest winds. So if we're here to grow and contribute, and I know we are, because you only have to look out of your window. It's not my rules. It's the rules of nature. Everything in nature grows and contributes or it's taken out of the food chain. Yeah, animals don't die of old age.
Yeah.
They can no longer contribute. They contribute themselves to somebody else's lunch. Right? So zebras don't die of old age, I can promise. Right? So when it comes to designing our understanding of this experience of life, when we look through the eyes of the athlete, see, if you were an athlete, but you didn't know you were an athlete, and you showed up to the gym, you got this psychotic person, personal trainer, that's trying to put you on the treadmill until you can out of breath, do press-ups until you're throwing up, you'd think they're a sadist. You'd be hiding behind the treadmill or the weight stack when you saw them. You'd be doing everything you can to avoid the workout or just doing enough reps to tick the box. But if you know you're an athlete and you're after that Olympic gold, and you walk in the gym and somebody comes up and says, "Hey, Johnny, psst, I've got a really great way you can cheat on your workout." You're like, "Get out of here." In fact, if my personal trainer isn't making me throw up within 30 minutes, I want my money back, right? So what perspective of life are you taking? If you're taking it from the perspective of the muscle fiber on that last burning rep, you're sending messages to the brain. Stop, help, I'm being destroyed, I'm being broken down. What the hell are you doing? Send more pain. But if you're adopting the perspective of the athlete, you're proud of that burning rep. You're proud you can bust out another one and get a personal best and can't lift your arms for 10 minutes. You go home with a smile on your face, yeah, with self-esteem, some pride, right? Not like, "Oh, great, I found another excuse to kid my personal trainer." So I got news for you. Life as a personal trainer that loves you in a benevolent universe isn't going to give you more than you can handle, but it is going to keep giving you the same lessons if you don't pass that test in class. And that can show up as like same relationship, but with different people, earning the same amount of money, no matter what different business opportunities or jobs you take. There's a level to within levels here. And if you're not growing as a person, but blaming everything else, you're going to get stuck in kindergarten and it kind of hurts a little. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And I think in terms of the growth, thinking about like people's stories that I've heard, even we sometimes think like the comfort zone or getting away from being comfortable needs to be, you know, a massive, massive jump. And actually sometimes we have to just build little bits of momentum as well. What do you feel about that in order for people to actually get to that growth, building little bits of momentum?
It's individual. Some people have massive shifts when they encounter what we call a significant emotional event. Yeah, some people just wake up one day and say, "I'm done playing small." Other people, because the fears that are holding them back are so chronic, in other words, it's not strong enough. It's like toothache. It's not really strong enough to go to the dentist consistently where it's like, "Oh my God, I've now got to get this done." It's like, it's just that dull ache. So it just kind of gets accepted as normal. In those scenarios, sometimes it's harder to take the massive action because we're not that motivated away from the pain. So in that case, yes, replacing the habits at incremental levels to kind of, you know, shift our focus and our energy is one thing. Because, you know, you bring energy to something, you energize it. You bring neutrality to something, you neutralize it. Shifts your focus, go in a different direction. But for some people, yeah, it can be a case of, "No, I need to change. I need to change now." And that level of impetus, if it's done in reaction to a short-term pain, usually doesn't last. If it happens as a result of an identity shift, then we have longevity. Yeah, if you turn around and say, "Right, I'm going to give up smoking," and now you become a smoker who's quit, I can probably count the days before you pick up your next cigarette. Because you're still a smoker, you're now engaging willpower to quit. But if you become a non-smoker, you don't need willpower. It's just not what you do. And a lot of people, unfortunately, are trying to change their behavior without changing the identity that supports it and therefore go back over time. Because willpower, yeah, it's like a sport button on a car. Now, you can press it when you need to overtake somebody. It's useful. Yeah, if you've got to get up tomorrow at 5 a.m. you know, once in a while, willpower is useful. But if you're relying on it to get up every single day for a job you don't like, it's going to wear out the engine. You know, I could have every, you know, intention to have all the willpower in the world to hang on to a tree branch over a cliff for, you know, for as long as I can. But if you come back in 3 days, I'm not there. There's a time limit.
It's only short term. Yeah. And I like what you touched on in identity a bit in there. And I mean, one practice that we talk about often on this podcast is use of incantations and getting it into the system a little bit. Are there any kind of things you would recommend to people trying to shift their identity?
Incantations are very good in terms of, yeah, the cementing, yeah, the cracks in the wall. But if you've still got pressure on the wall that's causing the cracks, it's still going to be temporary. In other words, if you're pasting over, you're at the top of an unresolved belief system, even with an incantation, then it's not going to be as effective as looking at what patterns were creating that in the first place. Now, one of the things I say to people is again, your relationship to reality is primary. If you think you live in a friendly universe, you're going to have a very different life to somebody who doesn't. If you understand life is non-linear, you're going to have a very different experience that everyone's trying to take control of their life by thinking that everything has to happen in a straight line according to their rules. Right? Well, it doesn't work that way. So when it comes to, for example, let's take relationships, not just intimate relationships, but yeah, everything in life is a relationship to an extent. Obviously, the relationship with yourself is one. But relationship with your spouse or your kids or your business or your bank balance or whatever it may be, or your car. Yeah. One of my favorite quotes from one of my favorite mentors, Master Yoda, because George Lucas, before he sold out to Disney, did have some wisdom. And he says a great quote. He says, train yourself to let go of everything you fear to lose. Oh, when I look at that, I say, okay, what would have to happen? Well, for a start, I'd need to unhook my self-worth from my net worth. And then I start to realize that the entire concept of ownership is fundamentally flawed. What do I mean by that? You don't own anything. You think you do, but you don't. Because at the end of this movie, and we all have a final scene, you don't get to take any of the props with you. If you're starring in the Fast and the Furious, then great, you get to drive some pretty cool cars. But at the end of the movie, you don't get to take them home. So the very nature of anything being physical means that its destination is non-physical. In other words, every single relationship you have, everyone, will end. Sorry. And I don't care if that's a relationship with your soulmate. I don't care if it's a relationship with your kids. I don't care if it's a relationship with your business or your body. At some point, every relationship ends. So knowing that in advance, what does the game become about? See, the way I see it is everything that you have a relationship to is like a wall that you're leaning against. And the level of attachment you have to that wall is the pressure you're leaning on it, which means when that wall goes, as it will at some point, if you're leaning hard on it, how hard do you hit the floor? Some people choose never to get back up. Whereas if you can stand strong on your own two feet and appreciate the relationships, the walls around you without putting pressure on it, you have a far better level of experience when and if that wall falls down and you're transiting through. And so, oh no, please don't leave me because I need you. No, you don't need me. Don't need anything. I need my job. No, you don't. You're just linking a lack of self-worth to having no money. Or you're getting scared because you think that we live in a society that'll make you homeless or make you starve to death. Well, we don't anymore. I'm sorry. Yeah, try starving to death. You'll get force-fed. Right? It doesn't work that way. You've got more than enough resources, and if you live in a friendly universe, something will provide itself. Always does. So when it comes to, again, having that level of understanding that we are in charge of our own experience as the star of the movie of our life. Now, some people unconsciously choose to show up in a drama or a soap opera or a horror show, but you get to hold the pen. You get to write the script. Now, you may turn around and say, well, if that was the case, I wouldn't be writing the crap that I'm starring in right now. You don't write it with your hands. You write it with your attitude. You write it with your energy. You write it with your intent. And you can speak to every single person that transitioned from a drama into an action adventure comedy, and they'll tell you the magic and the truth of that. And you won't believe it until you try it. As I said earlier, some people are just more into getting the secondary gain out of being in victim mode because it doesn't take courage. And courage is your gateway from a life of misery to a life of power. I don't mean courage to walk up to three guys in a bar. I'm talking about sometimes the courage to say sorry. The courage to fix a broken relationship, the courage to look at some of your faults and say, hey, it's just who I am and I'm on my own journey. Yeah, I'm sorry if I did that. That's that's authenticity. That's what brings out the level of life and brings us to essentially to understanding the third key here, which I want to share with people. And that is this: outer world follows inner world. Most people have it backwards. Most people don't realize that the outer world is a mirror that is constantly reflecting back. And if they don't like what's in the mirror, here's what they do. They're getting angry at the mirror because it's not smiling. That's pretty futile. And what do they then? They try to force it. They say, oh, give me a lipstick, give me a Sharpie. And they try to draw a smile on the mirror. They try to fix the outer world without fixing the cause because they're playing a fundamentally flawed game. And that fundamentally flawed game is what most people play, unfortunately, or variant thereof. If you're in victim mode or achiever mode, you're playing these two games. You're either playing feel great when, right? That's the achiever game. I'll feel great when I have the car and the body and the girlfriend or the blah, 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 whatever it is. When I get so-and-so, then I will feel X. That's your achiever game. The victim game is a worse version of that. It's feel great if. Yeah, I'll feel great if this would happen or if that happened or if that, whatever. The real successful movies that transcend all of that kind of drama, not the growth experiences. We're meant to be in the workout in the gym. Once you recognize that, you start having a different relationship to it. But the people that are playing the best games are playing the game of feel great now. Oh, I just lost my job. Feel great now. Why? Because something around the river is going to show up in a more exciting way. Or you're going to have some more stories for your grandkids one day to inspire them with when they lose their job and see how you handled it. Feel great now. If you're playing feel great if, because you think you're going to get to the end of the rainbow. And you know the amount of entrepreneurs that I've coached that have got to the top of Success Mountain and then want to hang themselves. Why? Because they had this mindset that says, I'm going to put all of my time, effort, and energy into being able to go and achieve. I'm going to go be successful. Welcome to 95% of personal growth, by the way. Yeah. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to sacrifice, pay the price, do what it takes, get up early, stay up late. I'm going to, and they spend the best part of their life, 10, 20, 30 years sometimes, giving up, sacrificing their relationships, sacrificing their health, missing their kids grow up, so that they can finally get the very, very few, get to the end of that rainbow where there is actually a pot of gold. They exit their company, they IPO, they do something, whatever it is. And what happens? They've now made enough money, finally. What do they do with it? They have enough money to pay for their divorce, to hire a personal trainer or a surgeon to try to get their health back, and buy their kids loads of crap so they think they love them again. I mean, is that not the lie that so many achievers are trying to run forward to because they miss the game of feel great now? They're running east looking for a sunset. And what do they blame? They don't blame the direction. Oh, I need better sneakers. I need a better personal trainer. I need to run faster and harder. Well, that's wrong game, wrong paradigm. Or they even try and think, well, I'm going to be happy when I get there. And they can see the horizon. I'll meet you on it. So they keep running. When I get to the horizon, then I'll be okay. Not realizing it keeps moving. But I can see it. Well, yeah, well, the fly at the window can see where it wants to go, but it still dies banging its head against it. Come down next morning and it's on the windowsill. And the people that realize there was an open window 3 inches to the left are the people that are playing the game of feel great now. Not feel great, because. No, that's never going to work. Oh, now I've got a reason to be happy. No, the reason to be happy is the fact you're starring in your own freaking movie in a time in human history that our ancestors have dreamed about. When you can start finding things to be grateful for rather than complain about, your emotional maturity is suddenly caught up.
I love that. And I think that relates to so many of us as well, in terms of we're constantly chasing something when actually, if we can't be happy now and pleased and grateful with what we've got now, more money, more success, more fame is not going to give us that. If we can't appreciate it now. And I think that's what you're saying.
Well, and the reason most people think that money is going to make them successful or make them happy is because a couple of reasons. One is a lot of their current personal pain points could be solved by an immediate money. I can't afford the mortgage on Friday. I can't afford to put my kids in the school I want. I can't afford to eat off the left side of the menu, not the right side of the menu. Yeah, so they perceive that by having more money, those will go away and I'll have no problems. Well, no, you just trade those problems for a better level of problem, right? That's that's part of the game. The other reason, as I say, they link their self-worth to their net worth, which is just, you know, a fast track to Stressville. But when you really start to live these principles, I want to give a case study. I don't want to make this theory. Theory doesn't pay the mortgage. Yeah, I want to give a practical case. And as you mentioned, just we were chatting before, that I had an interesting scenario 4 years ago now, where I was arguing a multi-million dollar business deal in court with a multi-billion dollar opponent, which was not the smartest idea. They have a lot more resources to hire a lot better storytellers, also known as lawyers. And I got sentenced to I did 6 months in prison in Britain's most violent prison as the only non-criminal. Now, bearing in mind, I've never been accused of a crime. I've never been arrested. I've never been found guilty, never been charged. It's one of those weird quirks in English law where they put in a contempt of court application. I treated it as a chess move. Didn't give it any credibility. My mistake. My ego certainly didn't help because I was kicking back against what then turned out to be complete fabrication because they dropped all of the civil action afterwards. But when I went in, I was at the top of my game at the time. I had 50 staff. We were changing thousands of people's lives. I was just about to have my wedding in Italy all paid for, everything. And I was turning around to my staff and say, hey, guys, just got to pop into court next week and get rid of this like BS, allegations that are just trying to bully me financially into some sort of settlement, which is what litigation is in business. Any entrepreneur will tell you that. And when it comes to litigation, it's not about who's right or wrong. It's a chess move. It's a tool. Anyway, they knew how to play chess better than I did, and I lost everything. I went from 50 staff to 3 staff in 3 days. Yeah, they hit me with legal costs of hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. Yeah, I lost my credit rating, my business, my credibility, everything went. And I got marched into the toughest prison, not segregated. I was treated like one of the criminals for 6 months. And in that scenario, you got a choice. You can choose to get upset. You can choose to get angry. You can choose to get despondent. And many do. I chose to get excited. I don't know what was around this river bend, but I trust the universe enough that something amazing will come out of it, providing I have the intent to serve, not the intent to get. So I went in not with the identity, spoke about identity of a prisoner. I went in with the identity of a secret agent of change. I thought, clearly the universe is sending me in to help people that wouldn't normally get the opportunity to be able to see me on stage or come to an event or get into personal growth. So, hey, if this is a graduation event in Earth School, let me go take the test, see what happens.
I do remember reading that they misunderstood you as a prisoner. I think if I remember correct, sorry, as a guard rather than the prisoner, because of the identity you hadn't attached to being a prisoner.
Absolutely. Yeah. First person that saw me there was saying, you're a police officer. I'm like, please don't give me that identity. That was the guard that was giving me my uniform. Then the prison doctor, just before they gave me a cell for the first night, turned around after chatting and says, are you undercover? I'm like, why do you ask that? You're the second person. He says, I've never in my entire career, 20 years as a prison doctor, met anybody so happy on their first ever day in prison. And I took it as a good sign, to be fair. I think he thought I was crazy. But long story short, because I know we're tight on time here, I want to respect everybody here, but I want to show them what's possible when they adopt this level of understanding.
Yes, please.
Shift their relationship to reality rather than blaming it. Remember, outer world follows inner world. And so I ended up just setting the intent to serve. I was working with prisons on getting them off drugs. I was stopping suicides. I redesigned the intake system to help new prisoners adjust and help to reduce violence in the wings. I won a national award for the work that I did in there. That's now being rolled out in prisons all over the US, Australia, in Europe. It's helping tens of thousands of people. And every 2 weeks, not knowing what was happening, I was writing to my senior students in real time, sharing them the actual techniques I was using. What were my thinking patterns? What were my incantations at the time? What were the techniques I was using to diffuse violence with people that were in there for murder or to stop the bloodshed? Or how do I get inside the mind of a prisoner who wants to kill himself and be able to stop them within 10 minutes permanently? Not in the moment. Anyone can cheer somebody up in the moment or distract them. What about being able to do that? And I broke down every technique I'd spent at that point 25 years. Some of the best stuff I learned from Tony and Joseph, and everything that I gained as experience in using in real time in the real world. And when I came out, they said that those 11 letters that I wrote were very extensive, but part journal, part diary, part you couldn't make it up, part tradecraft. had changed their lives, you know, by just coming along on the journey. And anyway, they invited me to publish it to help more people. We did. I think went bestseller in 2 hours, Amazon number one in 4 hours, outsold 3 suppliers on the first day. Yeah, it's changed the life of pretty much everybody that's read the book. And I believe, Johnny, I'm blessed enough to understand you may have a copy as well.
Yeah, I've got it right here. You might be listening, so you can't obviously see this, but you might be watching the video. The inside track right here. So thank you for your work, Peter.
Yeah, no, thank you. And it's now won some accolades, won many awards, many book of the month from book clubs. It's got praise from some of the greatest legends in personal growth. You have John Assaraf, Brian Tracy, John DeMartini, Kevin Trudeau, Dave Asprey. I mean, the list goes on and on, saying it's one of the greatest books they've ever read. And it's very humbling because it was never my intention to write a book. These were private letters. But, you know, 4 years ago, you know, the tagline is the ultimate guide to conquering adversity. You couldn't come up with a better manual for how to live your life right now in the global situation where so many more people are facing adversity or change or needing a tool set to be able to help navigate the mindset required to face that. And trust me, if I can face losing everything in prison and still walk in smiling and walk out having created a movement, a global movement, I can promise you whatever's going on in your life right now, the same tools that I used will help. And that's why when we spoke earlier, I wanted to do something special for the people here as a thank you for the time. So I know we've ran along a little bit here. And that is really to give every single person that's either listening or watching here a copy of the book as a gift from me as a thank you for listening. Now, if you do go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, you'll be able to see it's $24.95 on there. I wouldn't encourage you to do that. I'm asking if you can give me $4 to cover the shipping, I'll send you a physical copy. And the reason I asked for $4 is that it costs me, being completely transparent, about $16 to $18, depending on where you live, to have it printed, shipped to my warehouse, paid for storage, packed and picked, and then put in the mail to whether you live in the US or UK or Australia or whatever. An average about $17. So why am I willing to invest $10, $12, A, as a thank you for putting me on the show here. B, I think it's going to help a lot more people because that's my outcome. And C, if you don't pay anything, you're not going to pay attention. So $4, if you're not willing to spend $4, if I'm willing to spend $17 on you guys, then you don't deserve a book. Yeah, just being frankly honest here. People, if you're going to pay something, there's a fair exchange of energy. You're going to be committed to reading. And that's my goal here is to help more people, certainly not lose a ton of money on the books. And for some people, if they're impressed with what I do after reading it, or if it's timing, they may want to work with me further and I might get something on the back. So that's what I want to do. And I'll give you the website, and I'm sure you'll put it in the show notes as well.
Yeah.
If you go to getpetesbook.com/self-confidence, getpetesbook.com/self-confidence. You give me $4 and within 2 days, you'll have this on your doorstep as a gift from me. How does that sound?
That sounds awesome. And such a valuable, valuable gift for all the listeners today. And, in this day and age, we can get quite trapped or imprisoned in our own mind from how we think about things. And this book is a really, really good demonstration of how you can, free yourself, especially when you're in the most, perhaps some of the most challenging circumstances and, being in what most would perceive as a very, a prison guarded environment where you're trapped and you've been able to do it there. So this book is going to be key for helping people understand that. So I'd highly, highly recommend you check out the description and click on that link and get yourself a copy of this book. It could potentially help you change your life. I always say, the individual is responsible for changing their own life, but this is going to be a huge guide in you doing that. So thank you so much for that gift, Peter.
No, my pleasure. And if you know anyone that's having a tough time, hand them a copy. Yeah, we've had so many stories now where people have turned their lives around or stopped their sob story or managed to halt their negative slide just because of, and again, this isn't just a story. These are techniques. This is the how-to manual. My clients were paying me up to $50,000 a year to learn the stuff I'm giving away in this book. I mean, I can't stress highly enough the fact that I wish you were paying $50,000 for the book, because then you'd definitely read it and apply it. But I can't do that because it would put it out of reach of most people. But if you know somebody that you have a relationship with that trusts you, say, hey, listen, I read this book or I heard about this book. Give it a read. I think it might help. We've had some incredible feedback from people who have just been so grateful for the person that did that. So that's available.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Peter. So just before we wrap up today, are there any kind of final points that you wanted to share or any other resources that you perhaps think might be useful as, in addition to the book?
Well, if you want to say follow me on Instagram, what have you, Facebook, it's PeterSage007. And yeah, I'm always trying to put out as much free content as I can that's topical, that helps people. Again, my mission here is to try to add value, because what's going to get us through this global situation now is more and more people becoming better versions of themselves. Yeah, if we can raise the level of consciousness here, not the level of poverty, not the level of desperation, but the level of self-reliance. And what you teach, Johnny, self-confidence, self-esteem. If we can do that, then we have a shot at being able to come out of this into a much better world for all of us and leave a thumbprint on humanity we can be proud of. And I try to put as much free stuff out there on my Instagram, YouTube, et cetera, as possible. But yeah, go check it out. Go follow me there. And hopefully I'll be able to add some value.
Absolutely. Well, thanks once again, Peter, for coming on. It's been such an incredible learning experience for me, in myself, and for the listeners today, I'm sure. So thank you.
Absolute pleasure. Stay amazing.
Awesome. So we'll wrap it up today, but remember to work on your self-confidence every single day, and I'll see you in the next episode.